te vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the second canto, chapter 1, and text number 15 for today. Antakale, at the last, I will skip that till a little bit later. Okay. Purushaha, agate, gata sadvasa. Chindayat asangha shastrena spraham dehe anu ye cha tam. Antakale tu purusha agathe gatta sadvasaha chindayara sangha shastrena sparamdehe nuye chatam. Antakale tu purusha agathe gatta sadvasaha shindyara sangha shastrena svaram dehe nu ye chatam. Antakale tu purusha agathe gatta sadvasaha shindyara sangha shastrena sparham dehe nu ye chatam. Please chant. Chitam. Ladies, please. Antakale tu purusha.
Thank you.
Anyone else on either side? Synonyms, antakale, at the last stage of life. Two, but, purushaha, a person, agate, having arrived, gata sadvasaha, without any fear of death, chindayat, must cut off, asanga, non-attachment, Shastrena, by the weapon of Sparam, all desires, Dehe, in the matter of the material tabernacle. So tabernacle often means like a holy place to put holy things in. The holy place being referred to here is the human body. Okay? Sometimes it is referred to as a temple in which the Lord dwells. Anu, pertaining, ye, that, cha, also, tum, them. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body, and everything pertaining to it, and all desires thereof. Please repeat. At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it, and all desires thereof. Purport. Okay. The foolishness of gross materialism is that people think of making a permanent settlement in this world, although it is a settled fact that one has to give up everything here that has been created by valuable human energy. Great statesmen, scientists, philosophers, etc., who are foolish without any information of the spirit soul, think that this life of a few years only is all in all, and that there is nothing more after death. This poor fund of knowledge, even in the so-called learned circles of the world, is killing the vitality of human energy. And the awful result is being keenly felt, and yet the foolish materialistic men do not care about what is going to happen in the next life. The preliminary instruction in the Bhagavad Gita is that one should know that the identity of the individual living entity, or the soul, is not lost even after the end of this present body, which is nothing but an outward dress only. As one changes an old garment, so the individual living being also changes his body. And this change of body is called what?
Death.
Yes, death. Death is therefore a process of changing the body at the end of the duration of the present life. An intelligent person must be prepared for this and must try to have the best type of body in the next life. The best type of body is a spiritual body, which is obtained by those who go back to the kingdom of God or into the realm of Brahman. In the second chapter of this canto, this matter will be broadly discussed. But as far as the change of body is concerned, one must prepare now for the next life. Foolish people attach more importance to the present temporary life, and thus the foolish leaders make appeals to the body and the bodily relations. The bodily relations extend not only to this body, but also to the family members, wife, children, society, country, and so many other things which at the end of life, which end at the end of life. After death, one forgets everything about the present bodily relations. We have a little experience of this at night when we go to sleep. While sleeping, we forget everything about this body and bodily relations. Although this forgetfulness is a temporary situation for only a few hours, death is nothing but sleeping for a few months in order to develop another term of bodily encagement. Another term of bodily encagement, which we are awarded by the law of nature according to our aspiration. Therefore, one has only to change the aspiration during the course of this present body. And for this, there is need of training in the current duration of human life. This training can be begun at any stage of life, or even a few seconds before death. But the usual procedure is for one to get the training from very early life, from the stage of brahmacharya, and gradually progress to the grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas orders of life. Whenever I see a little Abhay, I see how gifted, how blessed he is to have. He's playing the drum in the kirtans, you see, and he's learning the language so well. So when you learn this at an early age, you see, it's very beneficial because you have knowledge which most people in the world do not have. Their knowledge is primarily material. The eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the body, the things the body can do. But there's very little knowledge of who we really are. So a child at 5 years old is learning that he is the spirit soul, gives him a great advantage in his daily life and a great advantage in maintaining a peaceful life, a joyful life, and a fulfilling life because he is actually on the right path. Did I finish grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas? Orders of life is the last words? Okay, yeah. The institution which gives such training is called Vanashram Dharma, or the system of Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma means the eternal religion. Dharma means religion. That's one of its meanings. It has other meanings too. And Sanatan means eternal. The best procedure for making the human life perfect. One is therefore required to give up the attachment to family or social or political life just at the age of 50 years, if not earlier. And the training in the vanaprastha and sannyas ashrams is given for preparation of the next life. So this age, which is given, it's basically pretty, it's somewhat arbitrary because there are some people who at 50, they're not even ready to renounce their families. And there are some people I know who are 25 years old and they were ready to renounce their families. I myself, in a different order, I took renunciation before I even came here. I was in the Shankaracharya order. So it was okay. I didn't have any problems there. And it lasted about 3 or 4 years there. And then I finally came here and aspired to a different form of sannyas, which is the sannyas known as of that which is the worship of a personal Lord, namely the Supreme Lord Krishna, and to attain purity and personal love towards the Lord, by which I could then become deeper and deeper in my in my practices to achieve this goal. So I don't recommend anyone to go to this what we call Brahman effulgence. It's a much more activity, much more happening here, much more fun, and much more satisfaction, because it makes a lot of sense. Unless you like to just go and roast in the infinite light, well, you can just go to the beach with that and close your eyes and look up towards the sun, and you can get Brahman effulgence there. Okay? I'm not recommending it. Better to come here on Tuesday night and enjoy the kirtans. Foolish materialists in the garb of leaders of the people in general stick to family affairs without attempting to cut off relations with them, and thus they become victims of nature's law and get gross bodies again according to their work. Such foolish leaders may have some respect from the people at the end of life, but that does not mean that such leaders will be immune to the natural laws under which everyone is tightly bound by the hands and feet. Those are the material laws. The best thing, and karma and guna and all of these things, the best thing is therefore that everyone voluntarily give up family relations by transferring the attachment from family, society, country, and everything thereof to the devotional service of the Lord. So it is not saying that we should not have a family, but a time comes when we have to join the eternal family, the divine family, the family of which we are part and parcel, and which we are often illusioned to. Illusion in the sense that we continue to think that we are the physical bodies. We are the physical body, that we are our emotions, and we don't know really who we are. But from 50 on, when a person, a male, is married, and he has some children, ideally some male children, or male and female, then he's ready to start to leave his home and let his children take care of the family. He's not necessary, but it is not an abrupt change. It is a very gradual change. Gradual in the sense that there are four stages of renunciation. One is the, if I remember it, Bahuduk. Correct me if I'm wrong. The Bahuduk. Kudichuk's first. Okay. Kudichuk is first. And in that stage, a person generally lives slightly away from his home and can come back at night in the evening and has dinner with them. It's not an abrupt change. But as time goes on and as the person who is living apart from the family, he begins to want more distance and he wants less of the family. So then the next stage will be Bahuduk. And that stage, a person will hardly visit his past family. If he visits the family once or twice a year, that is saying a lot. There's no need anymore. His new family is the spiritual family. Who is that spiritual family? Well, we have Srimati Radharani, we have Krishna, we have all the associates of Krishna. So he wants to focus upon that. He wants to become deep in that. He wants to become fulfilled in that. So that takes a lot of time, and it takes a certain amount of solitude, and it also takes a certain amount of associating with devotees who know more than he knows about this, so that there can be a smooth transition from somewhat impure, like if your hand is full of mud. Okay, so you take the hand and you put it in the warm water and swish it around a bit, the mud begins to come off. So the mud of material life also has to be removed. And the mud of material life is removed when a person, as I just said, associates with persons who do not have that mud on them anymore. They've taken it off through the shower or the bath of reading the scriptures, through the shower and bath of chanting Hare Krishna, through the shower and bath of regular worship. So he has a different practices now. Or if he had some of those practices before in his family life, he increases them. He multiplies them. And so therefore what happens is that the purification goes on at a much greater, faster, intense rate than it was going on even when he was living in the householder ashram. Because in the householder ashram you have many things you have to accomplish, many obligations. For example, you have children, you have to look after them. You have to look after their food, their clothing. You have to look after their schooling. You have to look after their understanding. So many different things there. They get ill. So these are obligations and responsibilities which help a person, of course, to become fulfilled in his household life. He can't just walk away. And I have seen persons, and it was actually very unfortunate, that persons actually walked away from their householder life thinking that all I have to do is just go to the forest because actually I don't have to stay with my wife. I know she's not really my wife. I know that I'm not the body. And they come up with this nice, beautiful pat type of design of what life should be. And they leave for 3, 4, 5 years, and then sometimes they realize they can't handle it. They can't deal with it. And so what happens is that they come back, and it's a bit shameful. It's a bit embarrassing to come back. But nonetheless, what are they going to do? The person realizes that he does need a wife, and he likes his children, all of these things. In other words, it was a premature departure. In fact, I talked about that I think it was yesterday in regard to your question. And those are things that have to be considered. And actually, under a spiritual master who knows what should be done, generally will not let a person take the position of, I just give up my responsibilities, give up my obligations, who cares about the kids, let the wife get welfare. This is not proper. And so what happens is often this person gets some really serious karma as a result of neglecting his children, neglecting his wife, neglecting his parents, and so forth and so on. So when things are done in a responsible way, as we have many householders in this movement, and they have children, they have wives, or there might be some separation now because the time has come for them to start the Kudichik business, the important thing is that it is done in not abrupt, not a shocking, not a disturbing way. We don't want to disturb anybody unnecessarily. Okay? I think I was down here, desire is the concomitant. Huh? What is he saying?
I'm not hearing it.
Okay. Okay. I have to find that page in the state. Best thing that will finish my transplant. Yes. How close is it to, or did I finish that? Desire is the concomitant fact. Just before that. Okay. It is stated herein. Sorry about that. It is stated herein that one should give up all desires of family attachment. One must have a chance for better desires. This is so nicely put and so compact a manner. One must have a chance for better desires. So Srila Prabhupada is saying, desire is not bad. It is only bad when it is improperly manifested or expressed. When desires help one to go back home, back to Godhead, to develop pure, true, loving affection for the Supreme Lord and all associates of the Supreme Lord. So when one desires those things are good because they not only purify us, but they bring us to a higher level of joy, a higher level of ecstasy, a higher level of happiness, and a sense of fulfillment because one is following the orders of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, there is no chance of giving up such morbid desires. Morbid desires meaning material desires. Example, I don't want to worry about death. I just want to go to the baseball game. Or I just want to see the football game. Or I just want to see the bodybuilding contest. I mean, what is the value of these things? Who does it help? It doesn't help the individual because he comes, if he wants to go to the bodybuilding contest, he wants to see if he can make his abs more rippling. You know, like a washboard stomach. Not going to help him. What's it going to do? So he enters a contest and he wins best abs. What do you do with those abs? In 25 years, all you have is a big roll of fat over them. It doesn't help anything. Of course, if you stay in shape, it's a lot of time, a lot of effort. Prabhupada is saying, use our effort, use our energy, use our enthusiasm to give pleasure to the Supreme Lord and His associates and also the spiritual master, as we have Srila Prabhupada, and those who are serving Srila Prabhupada. Desire is the concomitant factor of the living entity. The living entity is eternal, and therefore his desires, which are natural for a living being, are also eternal. Yes, many people, if you ask them, do you want to live, would you like to live forever? So many people will answer, well, if I'm healthy and I have lots of pleasure and I have physical happiness, well, yes. But if I'm sick, no, I don't want to. In fact, many people, they commit suicide because they can't stand the illness or the sickness or the difficulty. Unfortunately, such persons who try to end things quickly and don't go through the process of purification, they may have to go through it again. So there are no quick ways out. A person who bears, who endures, this is spiritual qualities, to tolerate, to understand, to realize that Krishna has a plan for us and that we must accept that plan, even though it's painful, but eventually we become free of it because we have paid the price that is necessary from a previous action or previous karma that caused us to receive this particular pain or suffering that we've gotten. One cannot, therefore, stop desiring. But the subject matter for desires can be changed. And that's such an important point. Everybody should memorize this. We can't stop desire. Many of the impersonalists, you find them all, they have signs on their walls. Be desireless. I know, I used to have that sign. Finally, I ripped it off the wall and said, this is a phony. Doesn't make any sense. How can you not have desire? And Srila Prabhupada, I really loved that when I heard it from Prabhupada because he said, what is true? Now you try, no, I don't want this, I don't want this, I don't want that. And then finally, one day, I'll give you an example. You want some particular type of candy, let's just say milk chocolate. Now, I'm not going to have any milk chocolate. I'm finished. It's too strong. It's too intense. It absorbs me too much. I can't stop thinking once I start. And you get on, and for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months go by, and you're a complete chocolate-free. And you're going around, you're telling everybody, no more chocolate, no more Hershey bar, no more Nestle bar, no more Twinkies, no more any of this kind of stuff. I'm free, 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 free. And then one day, you're having a bad day at the office or a bad day at school, and you feel terrible. You feel depressed. You got bad grades. And the girl whom you were talking to, she snaps at you and tells you, don't talk to me anymore. And you got one thing going after another, and you feel terrible. And then you begin thinking, oh, that candy, that chocolate, it used to taste so good. Should I not? Should I not? Oh, one little piece is not going to hurt. No one's going to see me anyway because I'm going to eat it in a secret place. So goes to his secret place and eats his candy. And he says, yeah, that was good, but that's the last time until tomorrow. And tomorrow, and tomorrow, like Shakespeare says, tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow creeps into this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle, life is but a walking shadow. I didn't memorize that for this class. This was memorized 70 years ago, by the way. I don't know how it's coming up. Life is but a walking shadow, a poor player that frets and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more, which is what this whole talk is about. It's about death. And so as it's the poet says, out, out, brief candle, go out. I don't need this life. Life is but a walking shadow. It's not real. It's false. It's unbelievable. It can't do anything fulfilling to any of us. So, coming back again, a living being is meant for, now here it is, so much important. Yeah. So one must develop the desire for returning home, back to Godhead. And automatically the desires for material gain, material honor, and material popularity will diminish. Many people think, you know, if I'm popular, that's happiness. You know, if I gain a lot of money, that's happiness. If I have fame, that's happiness. If I have influence, that's happiness. And none of this is happiness. Happiness is that which stays with us and continues to grow and develop and expand, and it comes from the Supreme Lord. When He is pleased with our loving service, He lets us know it. He lets us know it. He is in the heart right next to the soul. And He injects the soul with His own love. When Krishna injects the soul with love, we feel very happy. Not only in the heart, but throughout the entire body. And we want to do things for people. We want to do creative things. We want to do loving things. We want to do kind things. This sense of kindness comes with the territory of being a loving devotee of Krishna. Krishna is the supreme kind. He's feeding us. He's clothing us. He's sheltering us. He gives us health. He gives us strength. He gives us guidance. He gives us protection. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Krishna is the supreme giver, the supreme kindness. And we can benefit by trying to at least emulate this to some degree, because when we give kindness to others without any thought or expectation or demand of any return, but do it simply because it's good to do it. Krishna said, do it for me. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do it as an austerity from whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, please do it for me. In this way, you'll be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, give, 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 you will be liberated. And you will come to me. So Krishna is saying, just give everything to me. And if you give everything to me, I will not just take it, but I will give you something back so much more precious, so much more worthy, so much more enjoyable, something that you can take with you forever, not something that will dry up just at the first wind that comes and evaporates it. So here. And automatically the desires for material gain, material honor, and material popularity, I know I read that, but I want to read it again, will diminish in proportion to the development of devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada is saying here, the more we develop our devotional service, which means not merely doing it mechanically, automatically, indifferently, thoughtlessly, but doing it with love in our heart, with the pleasure of knowing that Krishna is giving me the guidance, He's giving me the opportunity, He's giving me the chance to express my love to Him, and through that expression of love, He will reciprocate with me, and I will become more and more and more filled with that divine love, so that that love makes us feel happy and fulfilled and satisfied. And the feelings of depression and hostility and arrogance and agitation and condescension, all those feelings will disappear from our life. Because we have, as Prabhupada says, we will replace those bad feelings with good feelings. They will diminish in proportion to the development of devotional service. A living being is meant for service activities. Service is an opportunity. It is not a drudge. Sometimes I see, Savas or somebody says, could you please take that up? Oh, can you get somebody else to do that? It's an opportunity. And I mean, if you have no energy left, you've been working for 23 hours, well, then I could understand a response like that. But if you're still a fairly young person, anywhere from 20 to 50, 25 to 50, when we get the opportunity to do some service, it not only wakes us up, it not only makes us enthusiastic, it not only makes us eager, and it not only makes us better at what we're doing because we're doing it. Not only this, But it brings us closer to Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. And when they come closer to us, we make faster and faster advancement. So a living being is meant for service activities, and his desires are centered around such a service attitude. This is so wonderful, really. This purport is just marvelous. Again, I'll read this. A living being is meant for service activities, not for lazying around, not for lying on the beach or going on a raft and just floating out to sea. That's not what we're meant for. We're meant to lovingly, kindly, deeply serve Krishna, please Krishna. Krishna, by the way, he's all bliss already. He doesn't need our help. But he loves to see us serve him because he loves to see the love that we're manifesting to him. He loves it because he knows it's good for us. And because he knows it's good for us, he makes us know how good it is for us by injecting us by his own bliss and bringing us in a greater, most wonderful, close feeling to the Lord. One no longer feels lonely. One no longer feels isolated. One no longer feels alone. One feels the connection everywhere. Krishna is in the wall. Krishna is in the ceiling. Krishna is in the plant. He's in the trees. He's in this gentleman. He's in this person over here. Krishna is everywhere, and we get to sense that. And as we grow, that sense becomes greater and greater and stronger and stronger. And that's why we feel affectionate and loving and cheerful and kindly to people, because we sense Krishna in all these other people. It's not me against you anymore. It's us together serving Krishna. What a wonderful life. We work together to serve. I see all the wonderful devotees. They do all these feasts that we put on. Hundreds of them outside serving out. So many wonderful things devotees are doing. Look at the deities up on the altar. Several hours it took to do that, and it was done that with love and devotion. So we should all feel thankful and not really take any of that for granted. Somebody put his heart into it. Somebody put his heart into cleaning this floor. Somebody put his heart into putting on those Christmas balls. Everything has feeling as a result of a devotee putting his heart into it. And if we respect each other from that point of view, there will be no arguments. There will just be discussions of a very friendly and cheerful and loving nature. I'll just end this now. The perfection of such a service attitude... Huh? Okay. Yeah. A living being is meant for service activities, and his desires are centered around such a service attitude. We should ask ourselves, am I in the service attitude now, or am I in the taking attitude now? It's good, because then we can correct that. Beginning from the top executive head of the state down to the insignificant pauper in the street, all are rendering some sort of service to others. The perfection of such a service attitude is only attained simply, and this is the whole point of today's talk, simply by transferring the desire of service from matter, from gross, to spirit, or to divine, or from, as Prabhupada says it so well here, from Satan to God. I couldn't phrase it better. Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. If anyone has some questions you'd like to ask after class, I'm here. I can wait for the prasadam an extra 5 minutes. No problem. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they're bringing parties coming up.